Well, the easiest thing we see is number one, check what you're eating. But the other thing we often omit is how and where and when you're eating, or why even, right? I mean, we can talk about food and nutrition. I know you do that lots in the podcast. So if you want to circle back to that, we can. But on the other hand, think about what you're doing when you're eating. For your body to digest properly, you need to be in rest and digest mode. Your nervous system works basically on a volume switch up or down. And the more up it is, the more fight and flight you are. Therefore, the less rest and digest you can be.
Welcome to the Plant-Based Curious Podcast, a place to explore and discover the plant-based and vegan lifestyle. Each week, we'll talk about our own stories and real discoveries, alongside our experts and experienced guests, about changing behaviors, whole food living, nutrition, and the amazing facts and positive curiosities about veganism. We're here for you as a guide and a place to gather resources. But with the simple click of our subscribe button, you're allowing yourself a little time and good energy to listen, laugh, and indulge in the lifestyle you may love. Please welcome your host, a certified holistic coach and plant-based lifestyle believer, Diane Randall.
Hello and welcome, everyone. Today's episode is a game changer. We're delving into the fascinating world of the gut and its profound impact on focus, memory, emotions, and health. Joining us is an expert in the field, someone who has dedicated his career to unraveling the mysteries of the gut, Josh Deck. Josh, welcome to the Plant-Based Curious Podcast.
Diane, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Before we dive into our main topic, could you share a bit about your background and what led you to specialize in the gut-everything connection?
Absolutely, yeah. It's an interesting series of events. Way back when, I used to be a paramedic. And I realized very quickly I was sort of a glorified taxi for the ill. I was working in sick care, not health care. And it wasn't what I dreamed doing. I really wanted to make sure people were getting better. I really wanted to help people, but that wasn't the way to do it. And so through a chain of happy accidents, I ended up leaving that career and got into the fitness space as a personal trainer back in my early 20s. And one of the women who started with me, one of my earlier clients, her name was Lynn. And her early days when we started together, she was on 17 pills of insulin for breakfast, nine pills of insulin for dinner. She was on high blood pressure medication. She slept with a CPAP machine. She was on disability on her list at work. And so all these things were sort of collapsing. And by age 59, we started at 57, by age 59, she broke her first world record as a weightlifter in the Raw Powerlifting Federation. It was awesome to see. And she kept breaking records till 61, 62 when she retired. And most of those records were hers at that point. And so to watch what a human body can do, going from such a detrimental state of health of 26 pills a day and machines and disability to breaking world records, it really opened my eyes to the capacity of the human body to heal itself. And I got curious. And so I started seeing more clients over the years, some who had depression or anxiety or skin issues and whatever it was. And eventually they got better through dealing with all the common denominators of health and wellness and food and diet. And the one common thread amongst all of it was their gut and their exercise. And coincidentally, the exercise also benefits the gut and vice versa. And so I realized that there's more to it. And I was at a conference one time, just doing a side gig or this trade show. And there was a presentation on digestive health and gut health and the microbiome inside the gut. And I was hooked instantly. I thought, I'm going back to school. So I saved up, took about 2 years. I saved up some tuition, private college, so I had to pay cash. And I went back to school. I became a holistic nutritionist and I was hooked. It just fascinates me, the human gut, and how I argue our gut bacteria are more important than our own DNA. And it's a pretty cool conversation.
Oh, wow. And that leads me to share with you one of the reasons I got on the plant-based path was because my gut was really messed up for years. I suffered for a few years because I would go to the hospital because either felt like somebody was walking on my chest and I thought I was having a heart attack, or I had so much GERD and acid reflux that I felt my throat was burning all the time. But when I'd go to the doctor, I'd get those antacids and all those medicines to dissolve it. And that just made things worse, to be honest with you.
As they tend to, yeah.
Over time. So I'm so excited that you're here today and you can share some information, because I suffered for years. Because if the doctor couldn't, you know, he'd tell me, well, you know, write down everything you're eating and, you know, but I really didn't get any help. So the fact that you have studied this and this is what you do, it just really resonated deeply with me. So you just mentioned that the gut bacteria might be more important than our DNA. Can you shed some light on the intricate relationship between our gut and our brain?
Yes, I can. Well, here's what we need to know about the DNA statement. We have 23,000 genes that make up the human genome, the entirety of a human being, all of our genetics, 23,000. Inside of our gut bacteria, there's about 3 million genes. So we have 130 times more genetic material inside of our gut than the rest of our entire body. It's really amazing. And those bacteria outnumber our own cells of our body 10 to 1. And we don't just have microbiomes. A microbiome is just a tiny ecosystem of bacteria. You have one in your nose, your eyes, your hair, your scalp. They're everywhere, in every organ, every orifice. There's its own neighborhood of bacteria. And they all communicate, which is even cooler. And so we talk about the gut-brain connection. We often hear the term floating around, but what does it really mean? Now, there's different aspects of it. Number one, there's the chemical connection. So your gut produces things like serotonin and dopamine and GABA and different neurotransmitters that keep you going, help keep you motivated, keep you happy, help you rest and relax, and all kinds of great stuff. So that's what's produced number one inside the gut, just the neurotransmitters. Number two, we have to look at how your body digests and absorbs. You are what you break down, digest, and absorb, which happens through the gut. So if you are inflamed, then you're going to have issues with inflammation, like having a broken ankle or a sprained ankle. You can't walk very far. You're compromised. You can't cover as much distance. Just the same way, if your gut's inflamed, you can't digest and absorb adequately. You don't have the same surface area to absorb the nutrients your body needs. You work at a deficit, and oftentimes the brain or the rest of the body will suffer. And the third area they connect is neurologically, right? We have our central nervous system, like your brain and spinal cord, as well as peripheral, which is arms, legs, fingers, all that stuff branching off. But you also have your enteric nervous system. And so we have billions of neurons inside the brain. We have hundreds of millions inside of our gut. Estimates are 200 to 500 million neurons inside of our gut. And that interacts with the brain as well. Think of it like a gut instinct, right? We think about what a gut instinct is. I actually did an episode on my podcast explaining the theory around gut instincts and how it's that instinct connection or instinct nervous system feel, that tangible sensation of a subconscious path. If you think about how fast your brain processes, right? Your conscious mind is about 2,000 bits like of information per second. That's equivalent to say 100 miles an hour. Your subconscious mind does 400 billion. That's like 100,000 miles an hour. And so your subconscious mind fires way faster. And that signal you feel in your gut happens light speed compared to the turtle, which is your conscious brain. And if that's compromised, it's not going to be moving as effectively. Your neurological or your electrical signaling won't be happening at the same rate as it should or could. And that can actually slow down your gut instincts as well. So there's a lot of really neat connections to the brain.
That is so incredible, because we all know what that feels like. We've all, as human beings, have experienced that gut feeling.
And imagine how many times you've experienced that, and it may have literally saved your life. You know, back in
if you listen.
Well, I'll tell you, Diane, I will tell you from experience, men are stupid. Many years ago, in my early 20s, I was in Mexico at a resort with some friends. And we went out dancing, and it was just mostly the girls. Some of the guys were like, hey, I'm not dancing. I thought, great, I'm going to go dance and have some drinks and have some fun. And we got to a bar down in, we're somewhere in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. And we started drinking, and we went over to the bar, and we said, just a couple of screwdrivers, right? Orange juice and vodka at the time we were drinking. It's easy. Let's have some fun. I love to dance. I was a competitive dancer. Like, let me just go do my thing. And so I wasn't a good competitive dancer, mind you, but I did compete. And so we went out. And it took 5-8 minutes to get these drinks, way too long. And I thought, whatever, finally we got them, yay. And I took a swig, and one of the girls, she looks me dead in the eye. She goes, nope, puts her hand over my drink. We need to go now. And I was like, okay, like I will always listen to somebody's gut instinct, unquestionably, not my own, but someone else's. And we got maybe 200 feet away from the bar. I felt like I had 30. I was dizzy, could hardly stand. They had to help me back to the hotel. So they had drugged our drinks. Yeah. So I didn't wake up in a bathtub full of ice because she had gut instincts and I listened. And maybe it not have been the same if her gut wasn't healthy. Who knows?
I think sometimes, depending on what's going on in our life, in our head, that we don't hear it or we don't trust it.
Yes.
We're not at a point where we really believe that the gut is the third brain and it's that powerful. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but at least you listen to her.
Yes. Yeah. Men are idiots. I didn't listen to my own. I ignored it. But, you know, on the other hand, if the doubters to go, well, is it really your brain and your gut are made from the same tissue in utero while you're in the womb being developed? It's actually the same tissue that splits to create these two different organ systems. So they are very alike.
Oh, my goodness. I'm really learning something today.
Good.
It's so incredible because the healthcare, medical doctors, whoever decides what goes together with the brain and the body, all that's been separated.
That is a travesty.
So that's why you don't understand that it all goes together. So part of the work I do and with this podcast is to help bring the mind, the body, and the spirit together because it is all one.
Well, you may not realize it, Diane, but what you're doing is actually the body, the embodiment of holistic and functional medicine. It's looking at the body as a whole. I get people all the time, I'm not into holistics. I don't do crystals. I'm like, that's not what it is. It's very different. So when we look at really holistics is whole picture. Functional medicine is root cause. So if you're a holistic functional practitioner or abide by the holistic functional rules, you look at the entire body as a unit rather than separating them to individual cavities and you trace the problem back to the root cause so it fixes itself. Whereas Western medicine goes, here's your symptoms. Here's the word we use to diagnose. That word we attach drugs 1, 2, and 3. Those mask your symptoms. And so if you have a hostage in your basement, right, and you put tape over their mouth, and just because you can't, doesn't mean they're not screaming. It just means you can't hear it as much.
Right.
And if your body's being held hostage to illness, just because you put tape over its mouth in the form of a medication doesn't mean you fix the problem. And that's the biggest issue with Western medicine in why 60, 70% of people over 60 years old in the USA are on 2 or more prescription medications.
Right.
It's the best monthly subscription service that the world has ever seen. It's a disgustingly good business model.
It is a good model. And I can tell you that it's all, once you walk into the doctor's office, they're waiting, they're ready, depending on the age group that you fall into.
That's right. They're just there with a pen and pad.
It's computer generated. Okay.
Even less personal.
That's right. It has changed.
Yes, it has. Soon it'll be a robot soon, I'm sure.
So I love the work that you're doing because I also know so many people that want to get to the root cause and not be on a lot of medications, especially older people. I do know that. But a lot of people, a lot of us have been conditioned that that is the way to go, the sick care. So it is breaking through all those mental barriers that tell us that we have to go to the doctor, we have to be on these medicine, because sometimes, you know, the medicine is to help you proactively, which is the craziest thing I've heard. Okay. I don't have anything, but you're saying if I take these drugs, you know, I won't ever, you know, get what you're telling me I should be getting, right?
Well, I love that proactive discussion. You know, I went to the vet and I brought my dog and he's 4 years old and, you know, he was due for some, because we were traveling and my wife's like, I want him to get his vaccines. I said, okay, we'll get his vaccinations. Though I may not have any myself, I'll get my dogs. That's
right,
fine.
Right.
And so went over to the vet and she says, have you ever considered getting him neutered? I was like, no, why? She goes, well, it can help prevent testicular cancer. I'm like, great. Have you ever considered a double mastectomy or like a full hysterectomy? She looks at me puzzled. I'm like, because that would help you prevent breast or uterine cancer. Like, why would I just lop off his body parts? And in the studies that they're doing in these animals, a lot of them, they're not differentiating raw food versus kibble,
right,
which is basically
exactly
fortified cereal. And so the studies you're showing me to prevent cancer are based on sick animals anyway. and we look at that translated to medicine for humans, we look at this and go, well, it's common that everybody is sick. It's common people have joint pain. It's common they have gut issues. 72% of Americans complain of gut issues weekly, being pain, cramping, bloating, constipation, diarrhea, acid reflux, something. And so because it's common, we've called it normal. And so we've adapted medicine to fit the new norm when it never should have been in the first place. And even our blood labs, even our what we do for lab work in the medical world, all that is based on a population where arguably 91 to 97% of people are not metabolically healthy. Their metabolisms are cellular processes. And I say metabolism, not just weight gain, weight loss. It's any chemical process in the body to maintain life. 91 to 97%, depending on the studies, are not metabolically healthy. And we base our averages off of that sick population rather than improving our standard of care, medicine, or health or food in the country. And so over the decades, we've seen diseases steadily increase. And in my world, I specialize in inflammatory bowel disease. We've seen a 5x in bowel disease cases in the last 30 years. 50% of the world's diseases reside in just 5% of the population, and that's the United States of America.
I can believe that. I was diagnosed not only when I had a scope test many years ago, not only did I have a healed lesion in my gut, I was also diagnosed with Crohn's. And the gastroenterologist, he said, well, I think you have Crohn's, but I'm going to send this to the pathologist. And he sent it to the pathologist. And guess what? I did not have Crohn's, but that was, look, that was it for me. Okay.
Oh, scary.
It scared me straight. Okay.
Yes, it would. They should do a new TV show instead of prison. It's a kitchen. Scared straight.
That's right. Well, that's why I was sick for so many years. I never, ever dreamed. And when I looked up what Crohn's meant, oh my God, I was thinking about that for like a week before I even got my test results back and what my life would be. I mean, I walked myself through the whole thing of what my life would be. Oh my goodness. So I didn't have it. Plus the gastroenterologist, before we got the pathology, he put me on prednisone. He put me on prednisone. So that's when I went to an integrative medicine doctor.
Bless your heart. Yes.
Oh, that saved my life because Dr. Reynes was so upset that the doctor put me on prednisone without even knowing what exactly my diagnosis was. He guessed it. I probably look like Crohn's, I'm sure.
Sure.
But putting me on that without the pathology, it took a while to, you talked about microbiomes and all the things in the gut. It took a long time to get my gut working again. But I went to the holistic doctor, the integrative medicine doctor, because I didn't want any parts of Western medicine because I probably was looking at a lot of drugs going forward.
An immense amount of drugs. And that's the problem is they look at these bowel diseases and they go, well, this is the disease. Therefore, here's your drug. You're a lifer now. And in Western medicine, we'll classify these autoimmune conditions like Crohn's or colitis as autoimmune, nothing we can do, take the drugs and you're a lifer, which could not be more farther from the truth. And we're proving that every day. We are literally reversing cases of IBD or inflammatory bowel disease left, right, and center. But Western medicine has this ideology where it has to be medicated. There's nothing we can do. So much so, Diane, I'll tell you, I had a client recently. Because I do a program for Crohn's and colitis. And she came in, she was diagnosed with Crohn's. 12 weeks, she walks out. She was in full clinical histological remission, which means no symptoms, no signs, gut was perfectly healthy. They did a CT enterography scan and found zero signs of Crohn's. And her doctor still said, I'd like you on Entyvio, which is an immunosuppressive drug.
Yeah.
Which is why I don't have Crohn's disease. She says, well, you have the disease, you just don't have symptoms. But the disease is the symptoms. So if I'm not on medicine, I don't need medication. I've not taken medication in 6 months. Why do I need it? Well, because you have Crohn's. You stuck to this idea that you need medication, even when you're symptom free. And that's kind of a more extreme example, but you'd be shocked how often I see that from GI specialists and other doctors, or a 15-year-old kid with Crohn's disease. He was down to 93 pounds. So he was just very, very sick. We had him on a program, 8-10 weeks in, he's up to 118 pounds. His doctor goes, well, I'm glad he's gaining weight, but I don't love how you're going about it. because what we were doing was holistic, not medication. And they didn't like that, regardless of the outcome. And so we do have to learn to advocate for ourselves and get other opinions like you did.
This is where we are. You have to, especially today, because it's Western medicine has even changed and I think downgraded even more today. So you have to advocate, because with the gaslighting and, you know, not having options, it's a real thing.
Yeah, we call it medical gaslighting.
Yes, yes. And here's the beauty of it. I felt I was experiencing it, but I always advocate for myself. So I saw through it. But most of the population would not see through it. The doctor's telling me I need to take all these drugs for my gut. I guess I have to do it. There's still a lot of people that will just say okay with whatever they give them, not even know what the side effects are. So if someone's listening today and they have IBS, they have a lot of gut issues, what is the first thing you would tell them to do if they're experiencing some of these issues?
Well, the easiest thing we see is number one, check what you're eating. But the other thing we often omit is how and where and when you're eating, or why even, right? I mean, we can talk about food and nutrition. I know you do that lots in the podcast. So if you want to circle back to that, we can. But on the other hand, think about what you're doing when you're eating. For your body to digest properly, you need to be in rest and digest mode. Your nervous system works basically on a volume switch up or down. And the more up it is, the more fight and flight you are. Therefore, the less rest and digest you can be. Now, on the other hand, if you turn that chill button down, all the way the volume comes down to that rest and digest, you can digest more easily, which means you can break down and digest and absorb more easily. So think about the mom running 5 kids to soccer practice and dashboard dining and cramming food, and she's on the go. You are in full fight or flight. You're not producing enough stomach acid. You're not going to be adequately producing digestive enzymes. Your motility, or that peristalsis, that movement of food through the GI tract, is going to be inhibited or impaired in some way, which means the entire assembly line is thrown off. So you're not digesting properly. You're going to have whole undigested food. You're going to end up with the leaky gut stuff. You're going to end up with a lot of bloat, a lot of gas, digestive symptoms. What we need to be doing in an ideal space is we sit, even if you're in the car on the go, tell the kids to shut up and just take a couple of breaths, in and out, one or two, and then maybe start eating slowly. If you can sit to eat, or sometimes you're honest to God, better off not eating. I've had people go, well, I'm really hungry. So they grab, you know, McDonald's on the go. Your hunger can wait. You could go weeks without eating and not die. It's just uncomfortable. And so to develop that, what we're doing, how we're eating, that's a big, big part of nutrition.
Okay. So since you said that, and I think back to when I had these issues, I was that mom traveling around, but I ate in my car. At that time, I crammed food down just to get it in before I got to the kids.
Yeah. Super mom. I mean, you're working.
Yeah, I definitely live like that. So this is really phenomenal information, because I never, ever put that together. And I was totally stressed out. Okay.
So I'll admit to you here, Diane, I am talking as a bit of an imposter. I have a dog. I don't have kids. He's about as needy as 7 kids. So what advice would you give to your listeners who need to take a minute to chill to eat between running kids around?
All that taught me, and I've evolved to the person I am today. And I always say, you have to pause. You are not super mom. You are not super dad. Like you said, if you only have 5 minutes to eat, then don't eat. In that moment, don't eat. Because it's going to, I would literally get a lot of indigestion when I did that too. But I'd keep going anyway. So you're really enlightening me on how I got...
Peeling back the layers, bit of a postmortem.
Yeah. Exactly. How I got to that point in the past. But fast forward today, I try to encourage people that it's important to pause. It's important to be silent. It's important to understand that you can't do everything.
So true.
And eating is intentional. Okay. If that's not the biggest lesson I've learned, eating is intentional. What you eat, how you eat, that is very intentional. Not, yes. Oh, they just My kids had leftover pizza and they handed it to me through the car. Not that kind of eating, really. It's very intentional. So that's what I say today. And today, fast forward maybe 25 years, I'm very intentional about my food. But I want to say too, I was very moody at that time. So how does the mood and the emotions fit in with all that?
Well, that's interesting. So there is a lot of regulation on our own emotions that we can take control of, you know, and that's a lot of training. And that's where I look to, you know, people who are experts in that field. For me, it's been a lot of personal development, a lot of spiritual growth, a lot of different aspects that have brought me to the point where somebody can be yelling in my face and I'm a 2 out of 10 upset. It's like, this is actually a you problem. And when you're sorted, then we can discuss. And those stressors affect you differently. There are some people who say, well, I have no control. It's just, that's actually a you problem. And it's hard. I don't know if you're familiar with Mark Divine. He's the Navy SEAL who wrote Unbeatable Mind and a couple of different books.
Yes, yes.
And he talks about in his book, he talks about the witness and having your own, being your own witness to objectively step out, like almost if you can imagine astral projection, an extra piece of you standing beside you in these moments when you're acting or reacting. To watch objectively, how is this behavior and why is it happening? If you were to observe somebody in the supermarket breaking down and screaming at their kids, your first thought might be, wow, what a terrible dad or a terrible mom. As a parent, you might go, what did that kid do now? And so it's a different perspective to say, like, what is going on in these people's minds and these lives? Somebody who steals, you know, if somebody tries to steal something from you, you can go after them like, F you, you're the worst. I can't believe you're petty, you're scum, you're blah, blah, blah. You go, look, this person is in such a desperate position. They're willing to go to jail and risk getting caught, risk harm to their physical body to acquire that sandwich or whatever it is. Like, they're in a pretty desperate situation. How can I help? And once we start reframing these things in our mind, it becomes less about us versus them. And we can actually see our witness and now observe us as them in this kind of projection. And that's how we can start to, I feel, is what I've used a lot to regulate my emotions.
Exactly. And being the observer of our own, not thoughts, but our own actions. And sometimes giving that person the space to do what they're doing so that they can learn what they need to learn about that experience.
Totally.
You know? So
we can't control everything or everyone.
You can only control yourself.
Yes.
And you know, many people struggle with that. So
yeah. And that was probably the first lesson my wife and I both learned in our first couple years of marriage. It's exactly that.
Yeah. 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 So you just talked about social behaviors. So actually I'm thinking about, do you feel that some of the actions that people do, whether they're stealing, whether they're, you know, doing things in inappropriate behaviors, do you feel that that is connected to the gut, to social behavior?
So glad you asked. Yes. Now, it's still something where we're learning in exactly what is connected. But here's the thing. I would surmise to say that in some way, shape, or form, it could all be connected next to other. There's obviously layers, multi-layers.
Right, right.
There's going to be traumas and life experiences and personal observations and lessons learned and all those different things, but it's definitely a piece of the puzzle. We know, for example, people who overeat, there's definitely a psychological component there, but we can also see that food reward behavior is actually, in part, your gut bacteria is responsible for that chemically, the rewards we get from food. For example, there was a study they had done with mice, a lot of mice trials, where they actually gave antibiotics and flushed out as much bacteria from the gut as they possibly could. And they put these mice on a caloric deficit, right, to like lose weight. And they found these mice with altered bacteria did not have the same benefits, did not lose the same weight or get the same physiological benefits in their cells and hormones from calorie deficits or fasting as those with healthy bacteria. So we know, we look at people, what I call our weight loss resistant. We kind of accepted obesity now and gone, well, I'm big boned, or it's just, it is what it is.
Yeah. And,
but here, right? It's a crazy picture. Like your skeleton's no bigger than mine is. But the difference is we've had to come to this conclusion as acceptance because we don't understand that our body is holding toxins or is unable due to the detriments to our bacteria. We consume 19 times more different types of pesticides now than we did in 1990. We consume 2 to 4 times the amount in poundage than we did 30 years ago. And coincidentally, all these diseases are going up. And so we know in these same mice studies, back to the question, that their food reward system was actually altered, how much they sought food or chose to go after food in these instances. We know that your gut bacteria can actually alter how social you feel like being in a given day. But even that, it's not just your gut bacteria, it's even other microbes. I'll throw a scenario at you, Diane. Have you ever heard these situations of people getting organ transplants and picking up weird personality traits?
No.
So cool one for you. There was a story that came out, it might have been the early 2000s, of a lady. She ended up getting a heart transplant. She was a mother of three or four, you know, stay-at-home mom, very well reserved. And she got a heart transplant from a fella who died in a motorcycle accident doing his Evel Knievel. And he died because he was an adrenaline junkie. Well, she got that heart, and over the years, months and years, she started to develop different personality traits. She started to pick up smoking, started to enjoy more risky behavior. And so the question is it the cells of the heart, the DNA, maybe integrating in these personality traits? Or I would pose the theory that it's the microbiomes, the bacteria within these organs, actually influencing other aspects. Think about the cultural diversity of a neighborhood. If you have a bunch of white Americans coming in, and a bunch of tribal Africans coming in, with a bunch of Islamic Muslims coming in, and different cultures coming into the neighborhood, it's not just going to have Starbucks. You're going to have a halal meat butcher. You're going to have all these different places. And so the diversity changes, the personalities change, everything changes. And so I love how like white women, like Starbucks was like the thing I use, but that's what came to mind. But the idea being that the diversity changes in an ecosystem the same as it would a community. And we're just on the cusp of figuring this stuff out right now, but it is a fascinating thought to explore. And again, even just the neurotransmitters that are produced, the dopamine and serotonin and other things that we see produced from the gut bacteria influence our wants and needs and cravings even in our personalities. So there is a really cool connection, but also yet to be explored.
So what happens when you lump processed food on top of that?
Everything goes downhill. That's the easiest way I can put it. I think the question is what doesn't go wrong? And a lot of people, I see people in, again, I specialize in Crohn's colitis. I have a group on Facebook and I have people all the time saying gluten doesn't affect me. I can eat Taco Bell and I'm fine. I'm like, honey, you're not fine. Like it doesn't work that way. You just don't realize you may be asymptomatic. And so take, for example, this will kind of encompass processed foods and everything as well. But a great example is like gluten. Gluten is bad for everyone. It is never good. It always creates leaky gut. Now, the lucky ones, Dr. Tom O'Brien would say the lucky ones are those who actually get digestive symptoms, who feel bloated, who feel gassy from eating the gluten. The unlucky ones are the ones who don't realize what's going on in their body, be it leaky lungs and asthma symptoms, leaky brain, whether you're having skin issues or joint pain or personality changes or fatigue, whatever it is. You can't trace it back as easily as someone who eats and goes, oh yeah, there it is. Because mouth to belly, we connect. We don't connect belly to joints, to brain, to eyes, to moods, to sleep, but they're all connected. And so this process is very complex. And so we eat processed foods or alcohol or other things. We are creating a detriment. We are introducing bad things that feed bad bacteria. The best way I could describe it, like all microbes in your gut's ecosystem have a role to play. Regardless of what it is, right? Just like everybody has a role in the economy, whether it's the CEO of a bank or the crack dealer at a gas station, in some way, they contribute to the economy and the ecosystem that we live in. And so whether or not you're an advocate for crack use, it doesn't matter. It's there and it's happening. And so if we look at this in the same way, we have, quote, bad microbes in the gut. We have candidas. We have clostridiums. We have these things that can be bad when they're overgrown. But in their adequate amounts, when they're being policed or controlled properly by the good microbes, this balance is actually harmony. But when we feed it these other things, imagine eating a hot dog. It's basically chicken feet and buttholes and, you know, parasites and hair and plastic condensed into this meat stick that we eat. We introduce this and it actually feeds the bad more than the good, shifting the poles of our ecosystem, creating overgrowth of bad, which leads to more toxic production, which leads to changes in neurotransmitters. And again, 70 to 90% of your immune system comes from your gut. That gets altered. You get sick more often and everything breaks down. And it's pretty bizarre because once you understand how it breaks down, I could look at someone's history and get a couple of points in time and fill in the blanks. Okay, you were 12, you started with acne. By the time you were 15, you started with IBS. By the time you were 20, you had depression and skin issues and joint pain. By the time you were 30, your doctor had you on drugs for A, B, C, and D. And now that you're 47, here's where you're at. Does that sound right? and it blows people away. It's like I'm reading their mail because it's a very predictable breakdown. And once you understand that, these choices make a lot more sense.
Wow. So as we navigate the gut-brain highway, can you share some tips or habits that the listeners can incorporate into their lives to optimize gut health and in turn enhance the focus, the memory, and their emotional well-being?
Yes, I would love to. So, because this whole episode can really create a lot of anxiety if there's no solution, you know? Years back, I'll tell you, when I was going to school to become a nutritionist, I developed orthorexia, which is like a fear of eating anything. I'm like, oh, really? This will kill me. I'm like, that's got pesticides and that's toxic. And okay, this is a neurotoxin. I'm like, I'm going to avoid all the foods. And to a degree, there's a healthy awareness until it becomes a paranoia.
Right.
My wife put me in check for that one. God bless her. But here's my first thoughts. If you are eating anything that's from the center of a grocery store, that's the easiest stuff, right? The perimeter is where you'll find your fruits and vegetables and other things. Those are the things that are going to be a better option. Now, the argument comes, of course, there's the spectrum of carnivore versus vegan. And I, as you know, I don't necessarily advocate for a spectrum. What I advocate is for quality. And so if someone comes into me and like, well, I'm eating vegan and I feel bad, but I want to eat vegan, my first thing isn't, well, go eat meat. My first thing is, okay, where are you buying your food? If everything is covered in pesticides, in herbicides, and fungicides, and rodenticides, is it the food itself? Like, you'll get carnivore doctors who will say, well, plants produce all kinds of toxins and lectins and don't eat them. Then you get the vegans who say, you can't actually break down the meat and here's why. There's merit to all sides. And I don't sit on either side of the spectrum. I say, where's your food coming from? What's in it? Is it the plants that are the problem for you? Or is it the pesticides? Is it the animal that's the problem for you? Or is it the grains and the junk they're eating causing inflammation while you're running on the go, decreasing stomach acid? So my top tips: shop the perimeter, avoid the junk. And we have this cultural phenomenon in North America where food is a reward. Food is an experience. Food is,
yes,
right? It's different.
Yes.
There are a lot of cultures that eat food, one, out of necessity, two, it's familial, three, it's celebration. But for us, it's like, you know, hashtag live, laugh, love, hashtag treat yourself. And so we're going out eating just like the worst food. And because it's a treat, and we're always treating ourselves. Rather than looking at food as a fuel, which I understand people kind of hate. But once you get to that, my treats are no longer going out and having McDonald's burger or an ice cream cone. I don't actually enjoy it. I've now got to the point where those things physically make me ill because my body's not accustomed to eating poison, really. And so it's a slow shift. Once you start to shift that mentality around food, then that's a good place to start. We shop the perimeter, eat the quality foods. Like if your great-great-grandmother would not recognize it, don't eat it. And then number three, I do advocate for supplementation. A very basic, even like a quality, of course, of vitamin and mineral supplementation. University of Texas did a study back in, I want to say 04, 05, on the diminishing returns of nutrients in our soil. So we have this thing called carbon cycling, or what we call biogeochemical cycling. Best example I can give, Diane, is if you own an apple tree in a farm, right? And you have a tree that falls off the ground, and that tree rots in the ground or it decomposes, and then you grow crops from that ground, then you eat the crops. That is biogeochemical cycling. But now we have crops grown in dirt. There's no topsoil, there's no microbes, there's no biome. It's dirt to hold a seed. There's no nutrients, no energy, no anything in this food. And so it's devoid of life. And we're missing. These guys will say you have to eat 8 oranges today to get the same quality of nutrients as one orange, say 100 years ago. And so we're missing a lot of it. And the reason we're sick, I don't necessarily think it's the foods we're eating, whether it's, you know, plants or animals, but of course all processed are bad, but it's the quality of the nutrient profile. So I do advocate for vitamin and mineral supplementation. I do advocate for perimeter of the grocery store, sitting down and eating and slowing down. And for those of you who have done all of the above, you're like, well, I'm still a bit bloated, just maybe try a basic digestive enzyme and pop one of those with your meal, and that can help kind of bridge the gap until your body adapts to digesting on its own.
Yeah, I use those. I have some that I've had for so long because every now and then, especially if I'm out, I'll eat something and it feels like it just landed in the middle, it just stops in the middle of my chest.
I know exactly what it's like. It's trying to break out like AVP, like an alien coming through your chest.
So I'll take an enzyme And it'll break it down and digest it. But yeah, I've had those experiences, especially if I'm out eating and I don't know exactly what's in it. It looks like vegetables. And you said, and that's okay. This is why I stopped eating veggie burgers. I mean, vegan burgers out, because I ate one or two vegan burgers and I don't know what they're binding those burgers with. And I could just tell it would just stop right in the middle of my chest. So
speaking of processed food,
not to do that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, that's one of the dangers of the vegan diet is we get bored of the vegetables and the plant-based only. So we start going to quote plant-based cheeses. And there's this idea that plant-based is better.
No,
no.
You know, it's been so convoluted. I mean, a lot of the vegan food and so-called plant-based food is just, you got to do the same work that you do in recognizing the ingredients in processed food. It's gotten that bad.
It's horrible.
I can share with you, I used to eat this vegan butter and it was, the first ingredient was oat milk, which is why I loved it because it didn't have a lot of oils in it. So the founder of the company, and I'm not going to mention it, somehow she got booted out of the company. Okay. And this is supposed to be plant-based butter, vegan butter. So now it looks like the shareholders, in order to maximize the food, there's salt in it now. And there's like three or four different oils.
Seed oils and canola.
Yeah,
all kinds,
coconut. So I always tell people to read the ingredients. I don't care. But if a plant-based company sells to, let's say, a big mass commercial company, it's really getting to that point. What I love now is I've evolved so much that I eat less and I really know what I'm eating. I'm really concentrated and I know this is a green. I know what this is. I know what that is because it's just as bad. It really is under the name of a plant-based or vegan. And I'm not going to,
trash
products, but it's the same.
We have to read our labels beyond ingredients as well, because we get duped. You know, what'll happen is you'll get somebody, maybe they're buying eggs, right? And it says farm fresh or cage-free eggs. And well, I'll tell you, all animals products that we might consume come from farms. So farm fresh doesn't actually mean anything. Cage-free. Well, they're not raised in cages anyway. They're pens or coops or barns or whatever.
Exactly.
So these are romanticized small town feeling words that feels good or more natural. And we get the same, we'll quote plant-based, and it's wrapped in craft paper. So it looks like it's this really healthy thing. But again, like Beyond Meat or these other burgers.
I was just thinking.
Right? 30 some odd ingredients. And that's the thing is plant-based, 50 calories sounds a lot better than 35 ingredients, half are plastic.
Right. But at the same time, I sometimes, you know, I teach a plant-based class. So my students may say, well, what about the Beyond Meat burger? Now, I don't eat it. And I'll tell them, I'll say it's better than eating a cow. Or I'll call it a transition food. Because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to trash it, but I don't want to say this is because it has a mung bean in it, but it's not totally plant-based. It's made in a lab and, you know, it's just not plant-based. But the marketing is so great these days, you know, especially the people who have not really transitioned. So their taste buds haven't been regulated to other things. So I call it a transition food, but it's not the healthiest.
Yeah. And that's where the challenge I think gets. And I think it's in the responsibility of the listener because, you know, even you and I will disagree vehemently on that one.
Like,
I wouldn't feed that to my dog.
Yeah.
On the other hand, some people are like, well, it's a transition food. And this is where I advocate, like, listen to different opinions on things and really draw your own conclusions because.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Yeah. Because so many of us are just swamped with, it's always this, it's always that. And the general population who doesn't do this for a living, like you and I do, can get very confused.
It is confusing, which is one reason I started this podcast, to educate and help people understand. And I always tell people, don't listen to me. Go to the store, turn the package of the Beyond Meat over, and read the ingredients and make your own decision. That is first and foremost, because the problem is, over our lifetimes, people have told us so much is healthy, so much is good, that it's so confusing. So
I agree.
Like you said earlier, we have to be an advocate for our own health, as well as what we put into our mind and our bodies.
I could not agree more. That's just it. We have to understand, otherwise we're being told. And I know a lot of times the brain power on that one can be exhausting at the end of the day with kids and families and work. And it's a lot.
Well, we're also conditioned with messaging that's coming from everywhere. And you know how the brain works. If you hear something a million times, then you're thinking that's something you always thought if you're not conscious of it. So
that's there's a good way to put it.
There's a lot coming at us. So it's just being mindful and intentional.
I love that.
I love this gut conversation.
I love your energy. You really bring it.
Thank you. This has been an awesome interview because you really helped me to understand how I possibly got to my gut issues in the past years ago.
I'm so glad I could contribute to the wellness of your life.
I connected some dots that I'd never, ever understood. So thank you so much. And I'm sure there's someone out there who's listening and will take some of your tips. And if people are interested in hearing more about you and your work, how can they get in contact with you?
Well, the easiest way to do that would be through the podcast. That one there is called Reversible, the Ultimate Gut Health Podcast. And I spelt that reverse able, fun play on words, easy to see on paper, hard to say with my words, but that's, you can reach me at the website. That's reverseablepod.com. And there's a contact form there. There are free programs for gut health if people want to get on top of that. And the podcast that we do two episodes a week. One is a quick tip. You can always write in like, hey, I'm dealing with bloat. Where's it coming from? And we can dive in. And then the second episode is an interview with doctors like William Lee, Stephen Gundry, or whoever else. We have some really prominent doctors talking about both how the gut affects our world and how our world affects our gut. We have homesteaders and farmers and anxiety coaches and all kinds of talk about these tie-ins so you can just learn how to manage your health. And again, that's through Reversible, the Ultimate Gut Health Podcast.
I will have that in the podcast description so people who are interested, because gut health is probably one of the, along with the processed food comes the gut health too. So,
absolutely.
So man, what an awesome career to be able to help people like that. So I want to thank you for sharing your expertise on this crucial link between the gut and the overall well-being. And plant-based curious listeners, if you have questions or thoughts on today's episode, I'd love to hear from you. And if you have more questions on the gut, feel free to reach out to Josh. He has a podcast as well as expert to come in help explain any questions that you may have. Or visit our website at plantbasedcurious.com. Leave me a voicemail or drop us an email. Until next time, stay curious.
Thank you for joining us on the Plant-Based Curious podcast. We really hope you've enjoyed our discoveries, experiences, and resources about the plant-based vegan lifestyle. Remember to click that subscribe button so you can join in on our future conversations. Until next time, allow yourself a little time and good energy.